Welcome, everyone. Thanks for joining us here at Then and Now, our podcast. I'm your host, John Shomo. Welcome to episode number 32, How Time Flies. This week, we're going to look at facts, anniversaries, birthdays for the week of October the 4th through the 10th. We'll also tackle several current event topics. There's a lot going on, as you know, and we'll hit on a few of those. We'll answer last week's three good questions, and we'll have a good three-parter here that I'll throw out to the audience for this week. So let's get started, shall we? For the week of October 4th through the 10th, we have the following events and birthdays and anniversaries. Here we go. On October 4th, 1880, the University of California at Los Angeles, also known as UCLA, was founded. The world was shaken by the launch of the first ever man-made satellite into Earth orbit on October 4th, 1957. It was named Sputnik, and it was put there by the Soviet Union. It was just the size, maybe a little bit more than bigger than a volleyball with antenna, and it just went around the Earth and beeped, but it scared us half to death. I wasn't born yet. I shouldn't say us. It scared American citizens and government very much. Because they were ahead in the space race, and the ramifications for that in the nuclear age were too awful to comprehend to many people. On October 4th, 1822, the 19th President of the United States, Rutherford B. Hayes, was born in Delaware, Ohio. He lived much of his life in Fremont. His home is there. It's a museum now. Hayes was president in the late 1870s. The late actor Charlton Heston, born October 4th, 1922. The late great Hall of Famer, West Virginia Mountaineer, New York Giants, Washington Redskins linebacker, longtime announcer, radio announcer for the Washington Redskins then, Sam Huff, born October 4th, 1934. The Hall of Fame manager, Tony La Russa, will be 80 on October 4th. La Russa managed several teams, White Sox, Cardinals, Athletics, won some world championships. He was managing the White Sox just a couple years ago when they won the American League Central. How times have changed for them. Actress Susan Sarandon will be 78 on October 4th. And Bobby Bonilla, former Pirates, Mets, Orioles, etc., outfielder, third baseman, Bobby Bonilla will be 60. Bobby smiles every July 1st because he goes out to his mailbox and picks up that $1.035 million check from the New York Mets that he'll keep getting for another 10 or 11 years. What a great contract that was. Moving to October 5th, Congress adopted the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, on October 5th, 1791, and sent it out to the states for ratification. Our 21st president, Chester Arthur, born October 5th, 1830. Founder of McDonald's, or at least he pitched himself as that. He was the guy who made it big. He wasn't really the founder of the first McDonald's. Ray Kroc, born October 5th, 1902. The Founder is a great movie, by the way. The last few years I taught, we watched it in economics class. Stars Michael Keaton as Ray Kroc. It shows kind of how it really happened. It's a very good film. Larry Fine, Larry of the Three Stooges, born October 5th, 1902. Steve Miller, great bassist, guitar player. You know him from the Steve Miller Band. Steve Miller will be 81. The great Mario Lemieux, the most important figure in Pittsburgh hockey history, will be 59. Mario Lemieux played for the first two Penguins Stanley Cup champions, 1991 and 92, and has been part of the ownership for three other Stanley Cups, 09, 16, and 17. Grant Hill, a fabulous college player at Duke. His pro career was a little bit too marred by injuries. He is president, head of Basketball USA. Grant Hill will be 52. Kate Winslet, the actress, will be 49. And a guy whose name has been mentioned now and then in the last year or so in the media, I'd say, Travis Kelce, Cleveland Heights, Ohio, will be 35 on October 5th. Moving to October 6th, the film The Jazz Singer, the first ever talking motion picture, premiered in theaters October 6, 1927. And what a sensation that was. The president of Egypt, Anwar Sadat, who had worked so closely with President Jimmy Carter, happy 100th birthday, President Carter, by the way, and Menachem Begin of Israel. Anwar Sadat was assassinated in Cairo as he presided over a military parade on October 6, 1981. Phillies pitcher, the late Roy Halladay, pitched the second ever, and there's only been two, postseason no-hitter on October 6, 2010. It was in Philadelphia. Game one of the National League Division Series, he won a 4-0 victory over the Cincinnati Reds and allowed no hits. The birthday for October 6th, former coach of the Colts and Tampa Bay Bucks, Tony Dungy, won the Super Bowl with the Colts. Tony Dungy will be 69. October 7th, 1919, the world's oldest airline was established. It is KLM Airline out of the Netherlands. The United States and our NATO allies launched a war against the Taliban in Afghanistan in response to the 9/11 attacks on October 7th, 2001. Barry Bonds hit his 73rd home run on the final day of the 2001 baseball season. The season had been delayed a week after the attacks of September 11th. It was originally scheduled to end on September 30th. They played those games the first week of October, and he hit his 73rd home run. That's still the record. That has a giant big asterisk on it, for in my house at least. Hamas launched the attack on Israel that we're still seeing the ramifications and the echoes of as we speak. The surprise attack that killed many and took many hostage, that attack was October 7th, a year ago. Birthdays: South African Bishop Desmond Tutu, the Nobel Peace Prize winner in 1984, born on this date in 1931. John Mellencamp, originally named John Cougar Mellencamp. He shortened it when he got real famous. John Mellencamp will be 73. Vladimir Putin, leader of Russia, will be 71. Enough said about that guy. Yo-Yo Ma, the fabulous cellist, will be 69. The 1997 Heisman Trophy winner from Fremont, Ohio, and that school up north, Charles Woodson, will be 48. And Mookie Betts of the Los Angeles Dodgers, soon to be playing in the playoffs for them. Mookie Betts, world champion in 2018 with the Red Sox, will be 32. Moving to October 8th. There are lots of stories about this, about how this got started and how this actually happened. The Great Chicago Fire of 1871 was on October 8th of that year. We took an architecture boat tour earlier this summer in Chicago, and they tell about three different stories about how that might have happened. I don't know which one to believe. Obviously, we'll probably never know for sure. But be that as it may, we know when it happened, and it happened October 8th of the year 1871. Sergeant Alvin York, American hero in World War I, killed 20 Germans and captured 132 by himself, on October 8th, 1918. He was awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor, and they made movies about him and stuff for that, and they should have. Don Larson's perfect game. We talked about Roy Halladay's postseason no-hitter moments ago. The only perfect game, and for a long time, the only no-hitter in postseason baseball history, was pitched by Don Larson, a journeyman right-hander with the New York Yankees in 1956. Game 5 of the World Series at Yankee Stadium. Series tied 2-2 against the Brooklyn Dodgers, the defending world champs. And Don Larson got 27 up and 27 down, striking out Dale Mitchell to finish the perfect game. Eddie Rickenbacker, the World War I flying ace, was born in Columbus, Ohio, or near Columbus. He lived in Columbus, Ohio, born on October 8, 1890. The Reverend Jesse Jackson ran for president in 1984 in the primaries, finished second to Mike Dukakis. Reverend Jesse Jackson, civil rights leader from Chicago, is 83. Chevy Chase of the original Saturday Night Live cast, celebrating its 50th anniversary as a show this fall, by the way, Chevy Chase will be 80. That ages you some, doesn't it? Actress Sigourney Weaver will be 75. Matt Damon will be 54 on October 8th. And Bruno Mars will be 39 on that day. Moving to October 9th, this is quite a day for music. Not dealing with music, the first thing on the list, the Washington Monument was first opened to visitors, on October 9th, 1888. I have been up in the top of the Washington Monument. It was a fairly breezy day in 1992. I was chaperoning, if you will, the eighth grade class that spring. It was a great view, and I'm not going to do it again. Okay, moving on. The Ohio State Marching Band first played Hang On Sloopy at halftime of their homecoming game against Illinois on October 9th, 1965. It has become a must play for the Ohio State Marching Band every game. President Barack Obama was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize on October 9th, 2009. Here are some birthdays for you. Let's get the football one out of the way. Mike Singletary, one of a line of great middle linebackers that played in Chicago for the Bears. Mike Singletary from Baylor will be 66 on October 9th. Now here's the music part. Bassist for The Who, the late great John Entwistle, was born October 9th, 1944. One of America's great singer-songwriters, I love him, saw him in concert, Jackson Browne, will be 74 on October 9th. Those are not the biggest one. The guy who started it all, who started the group that wound up being the Beatles, John Lennon, born October 9th, 1940. His son Sean was born on John's 35th birthday, October 9th, 1975. Finally, for this week, October 10th, the United States Naval Academy opened at Annapolis, Maryland on October 10th, 1845. I don't know if any of you have been there. I've been to Annapolis. We toured it a few years ago. Boy, you got to do it. If you're in the area, you got to do it. It's so unbelievably great to walk through those grounds and experience that. I would say the same about West Point as well. I've been there, done that. Those are great experiences for anybody. On October 10th, 1920, Cleveland was in the World Series playing the Brooklyn Dodgers, and Cleveland shortstop Bill Wampsnass turned the only unassisted triple play in World Series history on that date. Cleveland Indians went on and won that World Series in 1920, one of their two world championships, the other being 1948. Let's hope they may be able to bring one home this year. The Ohio State University Marching Band, once again mentioned, first performed Script Ohio on October 10th, 1936, the incomparable Script Ohio. Vice President Spiro Agnew resigned the office on October 10th, 1973. Why? The feds had him dead to rights on bribery charges. They went to him. They said, here's what we got. We got you. Let's make a deal. And he made a deal. He resigned the office of the vice presidency and pled no contest to the charges. And they said, okay, we won't put you in jail. That's how it ended the political career of the vice president, Spiro Agnew. David Lee Roth, former frontman of Van Halen, will be 69 on October 10th. The great tennis legend Martina Navratilova will be 68. Brett Favre, who's been in the news lately, he's been testifying. He's been involved in a kind of nasty lawsuit down there in Mississippi. He also revealed that he has early stages of Parkinson's disease. That's very unfortunate. Brett Favre turns 55 on October 10th. Dale Earnhardt Jr. will be 50. And Andrew McCutchen, Pittsburgh Pirates great, MVP of the National League in 2013. Andrew McCutchen will turn 38 on October 10th. So there you have it. There are our birthdays and anniversaries for this week. Let's move on to some current events. And boy, are there current events. The first one I want to tackle is Hurricane Helene. First of all, best wishes to all down there in the East Tennessee, Western North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia area. The devastation in some of those areas is beyond belief. And it would seem at first not to be logical that an area so mountainous as Western North Carolina, for instance, could be devastated by an earthquake. But the amount of water that came down in those areas was so large. And if you've been there, as I have, there's really no place for it to go other than the river valleys, and that's what happened. Asheville, for instance, a wonderful town that our family, my wife and I, and brother-in-law Mike and his wife Phyllis spent a couple of days there last year. A wonderful town. It was great fun to be there. There's a lot going on there. It's just damaged beyond belief. It's heartbreaking to see the pictures from Asheville. And there are many other places. I just point out Asheville because we have actually been there. This event has pointed out a bit of a difference between the two presidential campaigns. Biden and Harris consulted the folks in the area. They've delayed making a trip. I think President Biden was actually going to do a flyover of the area. As we record this, it's Wednesday afternoon. I think it's today that he's going to do that. So they waited. And why would you wait? Why doesn't the president go right away? Well, it's a drain on vital resources. Whenever a presidential candidate or the president himself or the vice president visits an area, it takes up a lot of policing resources, sheriffs, etc., away from what they really need to be doing there. And the vast majority of candidates and or presidents in my lifetime have consulted the local law enforcement officials and local leaders. They said, hey, tell me when it would be okay for us to come. I don't want to come if it's going to be a problem. And that's what the Biden-Harris people did. They're finally making a tour today. They're not going to be on the ground for long. They are going to thank first responders while they're there. That's a difference from the Trump campaign. Trump went out to Georgia and visited one of the places damaged by the hurricane on Monday afternoon. And then he took that opportunity to lie about communications that he had or that were held between the governor of Georgia, Governor Kemp, and President Biden. He said that Kemp kept trying to get a hold of Biden and he couldn't, and Biden was out of touch. Governor Kemp almost simultaneously said, that's not true. We've talked very many times. We talked right away. President Biden's been very helpful. So I don't know what Trump thinks he gets out of something like that. But anyway, it kind of points out a difference between the two campaigns. I would also point out as well that the last time part of North Carolina was really damaged by a hurricane was Hurricane Matthew, which was in 2017. Governor Cooper, who's still there, by the way, you know, serving his last months as governor, Governor Cooper asked for $900 million from the federal government for recovery. President Trump kept refusing that request and then wound up sending $6.1 million instead of $900 million. Again, you know, not much more needs to be said there. But we certainly hope for the best for all those folks. It's been an awful time down that way. And we're up here. We're all thinking of you. And if you get a chance to help with a donation or something like that, please feel free to do so. It would be a great thing. Okay. Sticking on sort of the politics route here for one more topic, and then we'll veer off of that for a couple others. The vice president debate, as we speak, was last night. The reaction seems to bode well for both candidates, both J.D. Vance and Tim Walz. Both, for instance, in a couple of polls that I saw that were taken after the debate was over, both candidates saw their favorability numbers among the public rise fairly significantly. Walz is up in the high 50s. That's unheard of for a candidate. And J.D. Vance got up into the 40s, where he had been not really close before. Maybe that's what happens when two candidates debate and actually act civilly toward one another and shake hands and defer and kind of act like grownups. Maybe that's why. Let's remember that also, while we're looking at this, the who won the debate polls are pretty close. Let's remember that VP debates rarely, if ever, have mattered ultimately in the result of the election. If they had, Mike Dukakis would have been president after the 1988 election instead of George H.W. Bush, because in the VP debate that fall, Lloyd Benson kind of destroyed Dan Quayle. It didn't matter in the end. People wound up voting for the presidential candidates rather than the VP candidates. We did find out that J.D. Vance is a little bit averse to fact-checking. He did complain that CBS actually fact-checked him once during the debate. In my view, they should fact-check both candidates a lot, but you know, he didn't like that very much. But the debate seemed to have helped the public image of both J.D. Vance and Tim Walz. I think the Democrats would take that right now. Okay, moving along. Topic number three, the death of the all-time hit leader in Major League Baseball history, Pete Rose. Pete Rose passed away Monday evening at his home in Las Vegas, near Las Vegas. At the age of 83, he leaves. You talk about an incredibly complicated legacy that he leaves behind. My goodness. The all-time hits leader in baseball, 4,256 hits, very famously passed Ty Cobb, near the end of his career. Played for the Reds for an awful long time. He was a Cincinnati kid, grew up in Western Hills. Went free agent to the Phillies, helped them win a title. Played for the Montreal Expos for a couple years and then went back to the Reds and was player manager and then manager of the Cincinnati Reds. The complicated legacy is this. The number one sin in baseball, dating back to 1919 and the Chicago White Sox, who became known as the Black Sox, is that you do not gamble on baseball. There is a rule, Rule 19.1, I think it is posted on the door of every major league clubhouse. It's the first thing you see when you get to the clubhouse, that it's verboten. It is a absolute no-no to gamble on baseball. Pete Rose's sin was gambling on baseball. He admitted to it while he was the manager of the Cincinnati Reds. He said he never bet on a Reds game. Okay, so what's the problem? The problem is that the manager knows a lot of information that nobody else knows. That's one of the problems. And, you know, he talks to the manager of the, you know, Philadelphia Phillies, and he finds out that a couple of their players are kind of nursing nagging injuries, and this one guy may be out for longer than they think. So he could use that information to then place bets on other baseball games. Plus, in baseball, you can't do it. Baseball was so harmed by the Black Sox scandal in 1919 and 1920 that never again did they ever want that to happen. And it's the number one thing you can't do. You get second chances, third chances on drug abuse and so forth. You don't get a second chance on gambling on baseball. And he did, and he was not contrite, and he didn't admit to it for a long time. Actually spent time in jail, and that's why he wasn't admitted back into Major League Baseball. The Hall of Fame is a separate issue. The Baseball Hall of Fame kind of has their own rules. It's not run by MLB. It's run by the Baseball Writers Association of America. The election is to the Hall of Fame. They could put him on the ballot anytime they want to. They have chosen to never put him on the ballot for the Hall of Fame. If they would put him on the ballot, it would be a very interesting thing, wouldn't it? I'm not holding my breath. I've always thought, what would I do if I had a vote? I would say, I'm not voting for Pete Rose until you put Shoeless Joe Jackson in first. Shoeless Joe was one of the Chicago White Sox players banned for life by Commissioner Kennesaw Mountain Landis in 1920. Very famously, if you've watched the film Eight Men Out or if you've watched Field of Dreams, Shoeless Joe Jackson is a major character there. I wouldn't vote for Rose until they put Shoeless Joe Jackson in first. Should he be on the ballot? That's up to them. They can put him on the ballot if they want to. MLB can't tell them not to. They have chosen not to do it up until this point. Pete Rose is on the field. Career is legend. He played the game 100% all the time. He was a guy that even if you liked him or you didn't like him, you could point out to kids and say, hey, look, everybody should play the game that way. He just hustled all the time. He earned the nickname Charlie Hustle. He was three-time World Series champ, won the World Championship back-to-back with the Reds in 75 and 76, won with the Phillies in 1980. He was the MVP of the National League in 1983, although I thought it should have been Willie Stargell that year. I'm not biased or anything. But Pete Rose leaves a long, complicated legacy behind, to say the least. Lastly, for the topics this week, we'll look at the local sports teams real quickly. The Browns season is looking grim. That Raiders game was awful last Sunday. That shouldn't be pinned on Deshaun Watson, by the way. I'm not a fan, as you may know, but he played probably his best game of the year. He looked alive. He was running. He threw the ball pretty well. That one's not on him. They have some major issues. They play at Washington, the artist formerly known as the Redskins, now the Washington Commanders, who are suddenly very much alive and very much in it. Thanks to their new quarterback, Jaden Daniels, out of LSU. They're 3-1. They're scoring 30 points a game. The Browns' schedule actually gets tougher after this one. This season is slipping fast for the Cleveland Browns, looking grim. Not so grim for the Guardians. They're enjoying a few days off here while the other teams, other than them and the Yankees, battle in the first round of the playoffs in the American League. The Guardians are awaiting the winner of the Detroit Tigers-Houston Astros series as I speak. The starting pitchers are warming up in Houston for Game 2. The Tigers behind Skubal won Game 1 yesterday and need one more win to advance to play Cleveland. That series will start Saturday. So we'll see. The Guardians will be playing ball Saturday against either the Detroit Tigers or, if they come back and win two in a row, the Houston Astros. More about that next week. All right, moving along to our three good questions segment. And by the way, if you have a good question that you want to send into the podcast, here's the email address for doing so. It's threegoodquestions@gmail.com. That's three, T-H-R-E-E, spelled out, goodquestions@gmail.com. We look forward to getting questions from our listeners every week. I need to answer last week's question first before we move on and get a really complicated question this week. Okay, here were the questions from last week. They're all from a very faithful listener, Jeff Cole. The first one, what is the fewest number of wins for a Major League Baseball team that made the playoffs in a full 162-game season? The answer is the 1973, you gotta believe, New York Mets, who went 82-79, won the National League East over my Pirates. I was a 15-year-old crushed at that point in time. The Mets went on, beat the Reds and Pete Rose. Pete Rose and Bud Harrelson had a very famous fight at second base at Shea Stadium during that series, and went to the World Series and took the Oakland A's to seven games before losing. Question number two, who is the first African-American to play baseball at Kansas State University? The hint is his son is more famous than he is, but in a different sport. Okay, so the guy's name, who was the first African-American baseball player at Kansas State in Manhattan, Earl Woods. His son is named Tiger. How about that? That's a great question. The third one, only 10 schools have won six or more recognized college football national championships. Four of the 10 are in the Big Ten. Name them. Okay. The non-Big Ten schools who have won six or more are as follows. The Oklahoma Sooners have won seven. The Harvard Crimson have won eight. That's going way back. Notre Dame Fighting Irish with 13. Princeton, 15. Alabama, 16. And the number one team on the list, the Bulldogs of Yale with 18. Okay, we left out the four Big Ten schools. They are as follows. The Minnesota Golden Gophers, a powerhouse if there ever was one during the 1930s. Minnesota has claimed six national championships that are recognized. The Ohio State University has eight. Southern California, now a Big Ten team, has nine. And that school up north has 10 with an asterisk. They may have nine in a few months. We'll see. I'm hopeful. Anyway, thanks, Jeff. Those are three great questions. Now, this week's question comes from brother-in-law Mike down in North Carolina. Things are well where they are. They're down near Pinehurst. A three-parter. Number one, which players should be enshrined in the Hall of Fame, Baseball Hall of Fame now, only posthumously? In other words, are there any players that we should wait until they pass away? Hint, hint. Before they get enshrined in the Hall of Fame. Let's see what happens with Pete Rose here. I don't know that anything will happen, but it'd be interesting, wouldn't it, if they wind up putting him on the ballot next time around. Then we have that. Then that question's wide open, isn't it? Part number two. Should the Hall of Fame acknowledge the qualifications of players for their on-field play with an explanation or an asterisk? If something else happened, like drug abuse or something like that. In Pete Rose's situation, I certainly think the only way I would be acceptive, if you will, if that's a word, of him getting into the Hall of Fame is if they included everything about the gambling situation on the plaque that's hung in the Hall of Fame. Then, you know, they can do what they want to do. I think, you know, yeah, if there's a problem like that, and that's the problem of all problems in baseball, then yeah, if they're ever going to put him in, they need to put him in and really spell out what happened right on the Hall of Fame plaque. Number three, question three, part three, if you will. Should it matter when the so-called infraction that the player committed took place? Examples, mostly throughout his career, like Mark McGwire, the back half of his career, like Barry Bonds, or after the playing career was over, like Pete Rose's issue. Should it matter when the infraction took place? I'm of the view that if you cheated the system to put up the numbers that you put up, then you shouldn't be in a Hall of Fame. That may be an old-fashioned, out-of-touch view. I don't know. Mark McGwire's not in the Hall of Fame. I don't think he's going to get in anytime soon, if ever. Barry Bonds is obviously the most controversial issue here. I saw Barry Bonds play in person several times and obviously a lot on TV when he was with the Pirates in the late 80s and early 90s when the Pirates were winning the Eastern Division title and getting in the playoffs. He was a one-of-a-kind player, fast, sleek. He would hit 20-some homers and steal 50-some bases. He went to San Francisco. He was still that player. The first year in San Francisco, he was a 43-39 player in terms of homers and stolen bases. Evidently what happened, and I've heard other people mention this, so it's not my theory, is that he saw how the country was enthralled in 1998 with the home run chase between Sammy Sosa of the Cubs and Mark McGwire of the Cardinals. They both broke Roger Maris's longstanding record that fall, and the country was just really drawn to it. Everybody's attention was on that. He got jealous out there in the Bay Area, and that's the winter where he bulked up, allegedly using the Falco pump-up system, if you will, with steroids and so forth. I don't, you know, he hit 755 homers. He hit them. They were in games. They counted. Or 762. See, that leads you to where I'm going here. Bonds hit 762. The record in my house is Henry Aaron's 755 home runs. And I'm not going to shift off of that stance. Should they put him in the Hall of Fame? Well, was he a Hall of Fame player before he took steroids? Yes, he absolutely was. Was Pete Rose a Hall of Fame player? Until after his playing career ended and he started to gamble on baseball? Yeah, I think he was. But I'm not going to lose any sleep over it one way or another. I guess it's a long answer to a shorter question. Should it matter? Maybe. Let's leave that one with a maybe, and there's a few examples, and we'll leave it at that. Thanks, Mike, for a real thoughtful three-parter this week. Again, we need some questions. If you have a question that you'd like us to tackle, they can be about anything going on. There's a lot going on. Please send it into 3TREE, good questions at gmail.com. Before we go today, I'd like to mention that we do a college football podcast here in the fall called The Fifth Quarter. You can find it on Spotify where you get our Then and Now podcasts. We put it out usually about Monday after the weekend of college football games. So if you like college football and you want to hear some musings on that, dial up our Fifth Quarter podcast and you can hear me ruminate on that sport. I appreciate you guys tuning in. Thanks a lot. We love getting feedback from our listeners. This is John Shomo. This is episode 32 of Then and Now. Please take care and have a good week, everybody. Thank you.